You're listening to Death of the Reader here on 2SER 107.3. This is your Murder Mystery World Tour, and welcome to the show for 2021.
Let's do it.
First episode, my energy is here.
Yes. Herds, we are here to celebrate the wonderful Seicho Matsumoto and his story, Inspector Imanishi Investigates, chapters 1 to 8, to kick off our 2021 run. Thank you for joining us through review season, if you did. I hope you're excited as we are for the fact that we are doing our own book. This is a terrible idea. It's just objectively a bad idea.
It's going to be fantastic. Can't doubt ourselves now. It's out there. It's in the world.
Now, Herds.
Yeah.
Inspector Imanishi Investigates, one of the earlier run books in the Seicho Matsumoto catalog. It's not terribly early. It's not quite his first book. But you can kind of feel he's still in the phase of like treading out his ideas.
I was going to say he's still sort of developing the style. Is this the first book with Imanishi? This is like his original story? It feels like
I want to say yes.
If only because he's Watson, clearly doesn't know him, and also is barely present in the novel so far, which is a bit weird.
The only reason I'm not sure is because whenever you get translations to the West, it's a little unclear as to what came first and all that.
Mm-hmm. No, I'm enjoying it so far. It's a very Japanese book, obviously, squarely set in the city and that sort of thing. And our murder is a man found on the train tracks,
yes,
if I remember correctly.
Which is apparently just the thing that Seicho Matsumoto liked, because his other most famous work, Points and Lines, is all about trains.
Oh, good. Well, it's a good thing we couldn't find that one. I will say, I'm worried there's going to be time puzzles, Flex, and I am not looking forward to solving those. It's concerning.
One of the interesting things, given how far we're into the novel now in the first 8 chapters, is that already we've crossed an enormous swathe of time.
And we've had 3 murders.
Yeah.
So,
Well, we've had one murder and 2 natural deaths.
They're murders. But no, I see what you're getting at. 2 months have passed.
Yeah.
The sort of setup to this novel is that this Imanishi guy is like, I think I know how we can solve this case. The word Kameda was heard coming from the murder victim's mouth. Let's go to Kameda. And then they find nothing.
Who could these 3 famous people in this small town possibly be?
Yeah, but
I'm sure they won't matter.
Yeah, they investigate a little. Imanishi investigates, you might say. But they don't really get anywhere with the investigation. No. And everything sits for 2 months.
They cancel the case.
Yeah, exactly. They have the wrap-up party. There's food there and everything. They have little snacks.
They have sake at work.
Yeah, there's this little bit about like, usually, you know, wrapping up a case is a time for celebration, and there's hors d'oeuvres, and there's drinking and everything, but everybody's just like really sad because they couldn't find the killer.
I love the idea that they have a party no matter what happens on the case.
They have little party hats on. He's like very dour-looking Japanese businessman with party hats.
It's got "you failed" written across the little conical party hat.
Happy fail party. But yeah, two months pass. This person's like adopted son like walks into the precinct. Is like, I think you have my father. Like, well, we don't have him anymore. We cremated him, but we had your father.
He was a lovely corpse.
It was a lovely corpse. It's actually kind of messed up, honestly. I don't know that I would fare that well if I was like, your father goes missing for 3 months and you only now are like trying to find him.
The way I read that scene was that he said, we thought something was up, but we didn't hear about this until 3 months had passed.
I guess so.
Anyway, the reason.
Try and find your father.
The thing that's interesting about this is that this is a very open circle mystery.
Yeah, sorry, yep.
I know while you were reading it, you were commenting to me, Herds, that one of the things that happens a lot is that there are so many one-off side characters.
Yep, they just
are no bounds to this mystery. And thus, it could feel very implausible that Imanishi is going around and just every time he's out in public, it's like, oh goodness, that reminds me of this case. Mm-hmm, Let me get back on this one.
There's so much to talk about here because it seems like coincidence after coincidence.
Oh, absolutely.
It keeps happening. Like, his sister is holding up this girl who's like shredding cotton into fields as a train.
By holding up, she's renting a room.
She's renting a room at Imanishi's sister's like apartment block. And then the second that he goes to like interrogate her, she's apparently killed herself via pills. Like, there's all these coincidences going on and all these side characters that only show up once. That said, I don't feel like it is an impossible story simply because Because there is such a sheer size of cast and there is no like cast list, like I would expect in a closed circle murder case.
I do like the way that it is used both as a narrative tension device and as a plausibility device when it comes to time. Because it seems so ridiculous that all of these coincidences keep happening, but then you remember that like he's been working his job and having regular day-to-day occurrences for 2 months in between these periods, and then another clue pops up. The more time passes, the more you realize that things are still happening in the case.
Yeah.
So the tension of what's going on starts to build more and more without much actually going on. And I think that that's done surprisingly effectively.
It's kind of bizarre, but I like how different this book feels. Yeah. We'll have a little line break or a chapter break, and suddenly we're looking from this person's perspective, this random person on a train who watched this woman cut up the cotton shirt and throw it out the window. We're just seeing little bits and pieces from all these different characters' perspectives. And so we're getting a very kind of broad look at Tokyo culturally, which I think is actually really cool.
I mean, there's even a lot of diversity in where we go, because there's not only Tokyo itself, but we go up north to Kameda and out west. And there's like, there's so many different characters with each with these little details. And Seiji Matsumoto has clearly paid so much attention to the intricacies of how they do things.
Oh, the dialects. Let's not talk about the dialects. Good grief.
While we're talking actually about the dialects and the translation, I don't want to talk specifically about the dialects, but I did want to chastise whoever has done the ebook version of this.
You notice it too. There's so many mistakes.
So what they have clearly done, what they have clearly done is that the ebook version of this is a scanned and auto-text converted copy of a paper version of the book. And no one has proofread it.
Yeah, there's one there's one particular example where it's somebody's son, the honorific son.
And it's
son
like SMFT?
Yeah, there was that one. There was one that was like Susa with a hashtag in the middle.
I think I've seen Imanichi's name spelled with a one instead of the I about four different times.
There's a lot of little mistakes in the ebook version. It's really disappointing, honestly. I'm still thoroughly enjoying the read, but whoever was in charge of the ebook, come on, guys. Get your act together.
Yeah, as you say, it's a minor concern, but something to beware. And this definitely may be a book that's better picking up a paper version, because whilst you can still get through the ebook, like, you'll notice it. There are random bold words and you're like, does this mean anything? No. Well, that's just bad.
Let's put it this way. It's a good thing. I don't get the impression the puzzle is about wordplay and like very specific points of information, because this is the sort of error that could ruin a book, you know?
Yeah, especially if it comes down to the accents, that could be devastating to this book.
They always call out what like dialect is being used and what they're discussing very explicitly, which means that that particular puzzle is fair and honest, you know, just as an example.
Yeah, but overall, I think the main thing that I'm impressed at with this book is that it feels extremely relaxing to read, but there's actually like a very thriller side to the way the story is written so far. None of the scenes feel particularly tense. It's all very just like, oh, we're going up on a business trip to Kameda.
Well, even when people get killed, Imanishi shows up to the actress and it says, the text is like, Imanishi nodded to the doctor there and he said, oh, you're here to look at the body. What are you doing here? You're a homicide detective. He's like, oh, you know, I'm just checking it out. I'm just having a look. And then that's pretty much the whole
scene.
That's
the whole scene.
Like, it's very casual.
At points, it even gets too casual. There are definitely a couple of moments where people just start talking to Imanishi and I'm like, why are you telling him this?
Yeah. Well, that's the thing. Imanishi, he's like a well-known detective type. And again, I'm gonna compare this to the Honjin murder case, where the novel went out of its way to explain that the detective in that story in the Honjin murder case was like a well-known person. And that's why everyone's being deferential to him and helping him out. But in this, we don't really get that. It's just everyone's just very casual with him. Like, it's Imanishi. He's that guy who solved a case a while back. I can trust him. Mm. Like, it's not even a point. It's not, it's barely a dot point in the story, but it means that the story flows much more efficiently, I guess. Yeah.
Well, Herds, I think that's the time we have for discussing the general story of this. It's time to duck over and talk with our first guest of the year.
Oh my goodness.
You're listening to Death of the Reader here on 2SER. You're listening to Death of the Reader, Flex and Herds here with you on your Murder Mystery World Tour, and we are privileged to be joined by Dr. LJ Owen, author of The Great Divide, the Dr. Pym Intermillennial Sleuth series, and the head honcho of Terra Australis Readers and Writers Festival. LJ, first of all, congrats on your 3 Scarlet Stilettos at the end of last year, and welcome to the show.
Ah, thank you very much, and hello to both of you. I'm very excited to be here.
Hello, welcome.
So first of all, Terra Australis kicked off in 2019. It looks like a really clever interactive festival. Beyond your normal panels and Q&A sessions, there are heaps of interactive games, unique fundraisers, and book launches as well. What inspired you to launch such an innovative reworking of the usual book festival?
Tasmania, and particularly the Huon Valley. I first moved here sort of 4 or 5 years ago. It was a gradual process. And the Huon Valley is this incredibly creative place, and it's full of quite diverse communities. And the very first thing that happened was all these stories, all these murder mystery stories, all these historical stories that are popping into my brain as soon as I started wandering around and chatting to people. And after spending one full year here, particularly in the winter, the winters here are long and dark and bone-chillingly cold. They're just perfect for crime stories, I thought. And the Huon Valley hadn't had a writers' festival in the past, which I found strange because there are so many writers who live here, novelists, food writers, screenwriters, some incredible creative people live here. And I thought, well, we should have a writers' festival.
It's pretty clear that you put a lot of, you know, creative energy and passion and innovation, and you have this huge lofty goal of like promoting literacy for the festival in 2019. It was hardly a surprise that when the 2020 edition of the festival was, you know, was cancelled, you launched Book Love Tuesdays online. Could you tell us a bit about what that is and how it came to be?
Really, that was about a way of keeping the community that we started to build around books, particularly crime and mystery books, going through the pandemic lockdowns. So once the lockdowns came into force, I think around March for us, we realised that we couldn't go forward with any face-to-face activities, particularly, again, with the children's activities that we had planned. So we had to sort of go off and have a think about how we could keep going with that, which took a while, to about July, to figure that out. But what we thought was, well, we've got this big community of people who came to Terra Australis Mark One, and we know they're still there. They're at the other side. They're on the other side of their computers. They still want to interact with writers. Writers who have books coming out this year really want to interact with their readers. How can we bring those two groups of people together? And I had personally participated in some really enjoyable online readers events on Facebook over in the US. And I loved the format. It was a format I'd never seen picked up in Australia. By about 4 or 5 iterations into Book Love Tuesdays, I had people messaging me saying it was the highlight of their week. They could look forward to that 1 hour as a space where they could interact with other book lovers and directly interact with the reader, with the writers, which they very rarely get to do, and share this very warm and book positive space, I suppose I would call it.
Yeah, I mean, one thing that I love about the Book Love Tuesdays is the way that it inverts the normal Q&A, where the authors actually get to throw questions to their fans, and that means that the fans get to put their insights, and that can evolve into interesting discussions that, you know, wouldn't have normally popped up in a normal kind of panel Q&A type setting. For example, Craig Sisterton, who did his on Southern Cross Crime when he released it, put us in touch with an interview he'd done on Soji Shimada, which was fantastic for what we're doing at the moment in terms of Japanese crime. Have you had any major highlights and discoveries or things you've learned about over the course of these discussions you wouldn't have otherwise?
I think every single week I learned more about what readers like, and it's not always what writers expect. Our characters can actually come alive for them and be like their friends. And particularly through the pandemic, when people who were at home on their own, quite isolated for weeks or months at a time, they turned to books for comfort and for companionship in a way that I had sort of forgotten as a reader myself. Because as a writer, I get to live with other people in my head all the time. I'm never alone.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
So I think, that connection between a lot of readers and the characters we create was underlined in almost every week.
Your latest novel, which launched at the 2019 Terra Australis Festival, The Great Divide, set in the frosty fog of Dunton in rural Tasmania. Jake Hunter's new posting as a detective in the rural town is welcomed by a missing child, a homicide, and a bizarre history with the local home for orphan girls. What is it about Tasmania that led to you jumping into the growing field of atmospheric crime fiction set there?
My first winter here. In fact, my first few nights here. So nothing prepared me for the bone-chilling cold of a Tasmanian winter. The air sucks the heat from your body. It's just unbelievable. And if you happen to be situated at a particular point on a hillside, not right down the bottom of a valley and not at the top, but a particular spot, you don't see the sun for days. The fog lifts to a certain point above water and it just sits there. It just stays there. And you wake up to this white glowing and this marvelous, horrific feeling of isolation. I think that's actually what helped me to sink my mind, my thought processes into the landscape and the geography and the weather here and start to really feel how the story that's explored in The Great Divide could work here and how it could, the setting could really reflect the world of the people in Dunton.
Yeah. I mean, on the note, you're talking about kind of the white wall out there reminds me of something that one of your panelists said at the CSI Tasmania talk at the 2019 festival. And on that note, actually, did anyone ever take you up on the challenge of a wine bottle in return for finding out where Dunton was supposedly located?
Ooh, no, but if you can tell me, I'd be very impressed.
I haven't can figured it out, but maybe we should. Maybe live, that's our next project, Herds.
Yeah, maybe that's next show idea. Let's go for it.
So literally a very specific place on Google Maps where I will just reiterate. So I created the town of Dunton. So it's not a real town, but the roads that they drive are real roads. And so the theoretical town of Dunton is set at a very particular location in Tasmania.
Well, tell you what, Herds.
Yeah, flex.
We'll stick it to the audience. If the audience wants to hit up LJ Owen, see if you can figure out where the Great Divide is set, Dunton, Tasmania.
You can win a wine bottle.
You can.
A bottle of wine, yes.
We'll give them a week head start, Herds. We don't want to be unfair to the audience.
That seems reasonable to me.
Now, one thing that impressed me about The Great Divide was the way that it actually employs body horror, but also uses Detective Hunter's professionalism so that the significance isn't buried by other elements of the story. How important is Jake's role as the outsider to critiquing the local institutions in Dunton?
For me, that was pivotal. So I think almost everyone who's grown up in the one place or the one place for quite some time, once they're an adult and they move away, whether it's permanently or just for a very long holiday, they'll probably look back at where they grew up and be able to see things from the outside that really they just couldn't see having grown up there and being completely immersed in the culture. And there are a lot of things about the culture in Dunton that the people who have always lived there just live. They don't see them. They can't see them because they can't step outside that reality. So Jake's role as an outsider was to see the little shifts in the way people thought when they were, their minds were sliding off a truth that they didn't want to acknowledge. And the way that everyone did that, so that's just how you were raised without it ever being said to just ignore that. And everyone followed. Whereas Jake, of course, hasn't been raised to ignore that particular aspect of their culture. And so he notices it and then he explores it and he does that over and over again. I think he would be the only person able to work out what's gone on because he's the only person who's going to keep asking the difficult questions.
Yeah, I think that was one thing that actually worked really well to me about Jake Hunter and Mina as a pairing in The Great Divide is that they're both very clinical about their work, but it's almost as a defense mechanism that they're bouncing off each other to deal with something that is quite horrific. And I thought that worked quite well. And actually, on that note, you've mentioned you're working on three new things. Can we expect to see a return of Detective Jake Hunter, or is this his one outing to seal his fate?
I will just give you the full answer. So
yes,
I have 8 different series that I've planned and that I'm working on. Obviously, it takes quite a bit of time to write each novel. So I have actually planned 6 more novels for Jake. He has like a character arc that goes over 7 novels in total. Now, I wrote The Great Divide in 5.5 weeks flat. I was impossible to live when I did that. It tore me up inside to write that book. It was a really hard book to write. So I need to put a few novels between me and the next Jake Hunter novel.
I can understand that.
So he will have further investigations and most likely set in a fairly similar sort of type of Tasmanian setting, but probably not Dunton. I haven't quite decided. So there will be more Jake Hunter, but not for a little while. I need as a writer to spend more time in other worlds before I go back to his world.
You could always write a book where Jake Hunter goes to Disneyland and has a good time and hangs out.
I just have a feeling poor Jake things would not go well. It's
going to work out. Murder on the roller coaster. Oh, no.
Well, LJ, thank you so much for joining us here on Death of the Reader. It's been an absolute pleasure having you and reading through The Great Divide.
Thank you. I've had a really marvellous time chatting to you. In fact, I know we don't have time. I could keep chatting for hours. It's been great. So thank you so much.
No worries. If you want to find out more about The Great Divide or Book Love Tuesdays, you can find details up on the podcast. And we will also be sharing the Book Love Tuesday posts as they go live through 2021. So keep an eye on our Facebook page for that. If you're curious, LJ, thank you once again. You're listening to Death of the Reader. We are discussing Seicho Matsumoto's Inspector Imanishi Investigates, and we'll be back with more of that in just a second. This is Death of the Reader. Flex and Herds here with your Murder Mystery World Tour. We are discussing chapters 1 to 8 of Seicho Matsumoto's Inspector Imanishi Investigates. It's definitely one of the better titles I've had for translated work
in
a while.
It's nice and snappy.
Like it has the same feel as Sayonara Slam, which is like that's a Western title taking advantage of the way the language sounds.
Mm.
And Inspector Imanishi Investigates is an English wordplay with what was originally a Japanese title. So
that's very good.
My applause to the translators, aside from the mess they did with the ebook.
Hopefully those are two different people.
Hopefully.
One of you deserves a raise and the other, death.
Death.
Now, Herds, you are here to solve one murder, one suicide, and one heart attack.
Yeah, three murders. I don't even know where to begin with this. I guess, let's get this out the gate. I don't think those were accidents. They're obviously framed as coincidences. Mm. A lot of this story is framed as coincidences and happenstance.
Yeah.
I don't think any of it is. I think that there is a lot of deliberate action going on here.
The first question I want to ask,
what's the question?
Is that clearly for the first and second cases, the guy who was obviously murdered and the person who committed suicide, that's easy. Those are easy to tie down as murder. How does a person having a heart attack that the autopsy says was natural boil down to a murder?
That's a good question. I want to call Chemical X, drug X.
Oh, no.
I'm going to say that there's some drug. I don't know if it's been concocted specifically for this story, but I think that that's what we're going with, something that was undetected in their, like, cursory autopsy. I don't know. I'll be honest, I don't really know. That's probably the best guess I'm going to have right now.
Do you think the mortician is being paid off?
Oh, God. I haven't even thought about – oh, my goodness. What if they are? But there are multiple people in that room, though. There's the mortician and their, like, associates as well.
Mm.
And Imanishi even sees the autopsy being carried out. So it's possible. It's possible. I'd have to go over them again.
Well, it's also possible that either of those other people in the room could point out the flaws later on in the story.
I have a question. Remind me, is that the same guy who was at the scene of the crime of the suicide girl?
I want to say yes.
Because if it is, and this is only if it is, then I would actually push that point because that doctor also says there's no need to carry out an autopsy. I will say, just so it's out the gate, and this seems obvious to me, but I'm 100% certain that the killer is among the Nouveau group. I don't think that should surprise anyone. We have four, I believe, characters. We have Waga, Erio, Takabe, Toyoshiro, Sakigawa, Shigeru, and Katazawa Mutsuo.
They're such a strange group. It's like, these are the modern-day media personalities driving the world wild in the 1950s. And my favorite line in the entire book so far was, that's Waga Erio, the composer.
Yeah.
His intent is to destroy the nature of conventional music.
Yeah. Well, they're kind of, in a way, they're kind of contentious. They're like, ruining traditional notions of media or whatever.
Yeah.
But in my mind, and I think also in Flex's mind, they're very much like a boy band. Yep. Like they're always together, these four, even though they do completely different things. They're a composer, a playwright, a critic,
and seemingly and a painter. Hate each other.
They seemingly hate each other, but it's one of those things where like on the surface, like, yeah, bud, how you going? But then behind closed doors, like, yeah, he thinks he's the leader of the band, or like, it's so bad. I will say though, my only note for Takabe is, France? Question mark.
He's going to France.
Because Katasawa said, he's going to France. And I was like, but what if that's a lie? I don't think it is, because he then has a conversation with him. But who knows? Who knows? But yeah, look, the way that they're presented is like, these are four characters who clearly have nothing to do with the story, but then we spend a ton of time with them, specifically Waga and Sekigawa.
Here's the thing, is that with those characters and their love interest, it's very easy to tie them to the suicide and the heart attack.
Sure.
Because that is a related circle of people around the avant-garde theater where one of them is putting on their plays and the other is writing critiques. Like that is a circle of individuals.
Sure.
What does the random police officer from rural West Japan under a train car have to do with it?
Well, here's the thing. We know that those two people that have been accidentally murdered I believe them to be accomplices, or at the very least to know too much.
Mm-hmm.
The woman Noriko was spotted throwing the cotton from the shirt.
It's such a good scene because like a university professor comes in and he's like, oh yes, I saw this young damsel throwing paper out a window.
She had nice legs.
It was gorgeous. Oh. And then Detective Imani, she's like, throwing paper out a window? The shirt!
Yeah, exactly.
Because he's been looking for a bloody shirt the entire time. It's so well delivered.
Yeah, and then he only finds like bits and pieces of it, which is fantastic.
It's like walking, getting a heat stroke, picking up random scraps of paper by the side of the road. It's phenomenal.
He has a thought where he's like, I should really hire a bunch of laborman to like mow this entire, like the length of the track
four
either side.
Four train stations. Like,
that seems reasonable.
Yeah, this is fine.
That seems fine. Speaking of, we get a lot of clues in Kometa K, sorry. We learn a lot of things, such as this is where the murder victim comes from.
Yep.
And specifically, we learn a lot about the man himself and the dialect that he speaks. There are a couple of things that I thought were really, really interesting, and I think are deliberately important. When his son comes to collect his ashes, the story makes a point that this is his adopted son and not his biological son. Also, the fact that the old T-man says that you wouldn't speak in that dialect to strangers because it's considered embarrassing. So I think that the killer, because we know that this murder victim was like nothing but a good person, I think that the reason why we're being told all this information is that not only is the murder victim familiar with the killer, but that the killer is their son.
Uh-huh.
Maybe, I'm not sure if adopted or biological. That's the part that I'm not entirely certain of.
Right.
But I think that's why the adoption and like the fact that this guy saved a bunch of kids from fires and landslides and things is being brought up so many times. I think that what is happening is that the either adoptive or biological son of this like nice cop guy has basically said, hey, why don't you come and meet up with me? It'll be just like old times. I'm going to contact you after all these years. And then he's whacked him. And the reason is he's trying to like hide his heritage.
Okay.
And I believe that this person is one of the Nouveau group. If I had to pick someone, I was going to say Sekigawa because he's so obvious he has to be the killer, but I'm going to lock in Waga.
Oh my God.
I'm going to lock in
Waga.
That's
a twist I didn't expect.
Is it?
I thought you were just going to go with Sekigawa and leave it be.
The problem is Sekigawa is too obvious.
He's so obvious.
Every single time the novel is like, if only we had someone who could fit these pieces of evidence, they cut to Sekigawa.
Yep.
But, and this is what I'm going to lean on, Sekigawa and some other characters have said Waga is trying to kill Art. And also that he is opportunistic. He keeps stealing things. But I think that somehow he's finagled his way into like being adopted by a wealthy family or adopting the name of a wealthy family. And he's trying to cover that up so that his marriage to Sachiko can be like in the bag. And that'll cement in his eyes his like proper life as a proper aristocrat.
This is quite the theory, Herds.
That's my theory.
Now, before we wrap up today.
Yeah.
You are at 0 points after you lost our double or nothing
game. I don't need
game.
Points to win.
Do you want Herds to up the
ante? Triple or nothing? Triple or nothing.
But do you want to go with the same or nothing rules as last year, or do you want to go with regular triple or nothing where you get all 3 points or you get no points? Because last year it was at the end of the year the loser went to zero. Uh-huh. This year, do you want to do the same?
No, loser goes to zero.
Okay, loser goes to zero. All right.
Let's continue to drive these points into the ground. Let's go.
All righty.
I'm in.
Thank you for joining us for our first episode discussing Seicho Matsumoto's Inspector Imanishi Investigates. Chapters 9 to 13. This is Death of the Reader. We are Flex and Herds. We'll see you back here bright and early next time.